John McCauley is in the studio, author of Leading from the In-Between, Crossing Bridges with Emerging Leaders. John, the first thing I have to say about this leadership stuff is it seems to be overcooked and well done. There seems to be a saturation of leadership material out there from John Maxwell repeating. John copies and pastes everything now. There's nothing new under the sun in the world of leadership. Oz Guinness. Come on. Leadership, leadership, leadership.
I agree.
Well, that's the end of that segment.
In fact, the opening words I share is there is a book on leadership released every – five books released every week on leadership. So one writer said, we'll be out of trees before we understand leadership. So
that's interesting. So why you? What are you – what all about this stuff?
Do you know what? This is not about the hardcore side of leadership. It is about working with people that are in this what I call in-between place. And that's kind of my – life, and that's kind of what we do. And
so explain the in-between.
So the in-between actually came up. First thing I need to confess, which is obvious now I'm in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
In order to create anything, it takes people. Like, your show would not exist without these two fine, wonderful people. I was going to say young people, but that would be wrong for Tim.
Mostly Megs. It's the one who runs the show.
So I was listening to my friend who releases CDs, and then she told me she had this great guitarist and this drummer, and I thought, hold on a minute. People releasing music can use all kinds of people to help them produce music. But if you're going to be a writer, you've got to do it all yourself. So I realized maybe I could bring people in to help me because, like you, I have moderate to severe attention deficit disorder.
Yes.
And so Don suggested that he ask me
questions. Don who?
Don Pastirsky suggested that he would ask me questions and Bran, who we give credit here, Brandon Mells, would write down what I was saying. And so Don asked me the question, how is it that I am part of a camp that obviously welcomes half of Oakville and welcomes, very privileged kids, but yet we've created a place for kids that have absolutely nothing? Why is it we have a camp that's here, yet we welcome First Nations kids? And why is it that we have a camp that's known for people that can do all kinds of stuff, but yet we've created a place for kids with autism and kids with challenges? And so he asked me, how have you created this? And then, of course, what he said is, you're also from Northern Ireland. You've created a camp that has a Christian sort of ministry to it, and yet you welcome kids, Protestant, Catholic, or whatever faith comes. And so he just asked that question. And I actually said, it kind of is like where I grew up in Belfast. And we went to a church called Albert Bridge, which was at the bottom of the Woodstock Road in Belfast. Right across the road was the Short Strand, which was really a 100% governed area by the IRA, and Sinn Féin controlled that area. And then in between was the Albert Bridge. And for us to go to church as a kid growing up, it would take, about 16 to 20 soldiers to protect us while we went to our church service.
Really?
Yeah. And then, sadly, when I was 18, one of our best friends was murdered right at the door of our church at the installation of the new minister, and Karen McKeown. And so we lived with this tension, but yet the people I grew up with there were not willing to be part of the troubles and yet suffered greatly. And so I was just caught up from a very young age with these people that could live in these in-between places, same as the Albert Bridge was in between our communities, so to speak. And so I just said to Don, I think I'm most comfortable in life in the in-between places, and I think that's where leadership can be at its very best. And so that's kind of how we came up with Leading from the In-Between.
But that kind of flies in the face of a lot of leadership books where I think leadership books come from a place of certainty and 6 steps to this and 4 steps to that, and this is where you need to be, and this is, you got to be certain about this and certain about that.
Yeah.
But you don't strike me as certain about anything.
No. I have a few certainties about you.
Okay.
And you likely,
I can turn your mic down for them if you want.
And the likelihood of you being a good grandpa. Do you know what? I think leadership is at its absolute best when it isn't so determinative and so I've got it together, but it's more honest and it's asking questions. So the greatest disposition a leader brings to the table is a learning mindset instead of a judging mindset. And Northern Ireland has been in the most horrible place because of judgment and as opposed to learning. And so actually I don't think it's having the right answers. It's actually asking the right questions.
Okay, but do there is a sheep mentality when it comes to the whole leadership dynamics. And what I mean by this is that the flock or the rest of the people or the general population, sounds like we're in prison, they are looking for leadership. We all want to be led by someone or something.
Absolutely.
Whether we own it or not. And when I look to someone who I think is going to be a good leader, I'm trying to think, do I want someone who seems confident, and that, in other words, they know where they're going? Because you don't want to follow somebody who's looking at their compass the wrong way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or their map's all, you know, ripped and torn apart, and they're turning left and turning right. They don't know where they're going. I want to follow someone that knows where they're going.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they have to do that with some air of humility, I think.
Sure.
Some
Absolutely.
Teachability.
Right. So when there's a crisis and there's a challenge, you're going to want someone to take charge.
Right.
Right? You know, someone walks in here wearing a yellow hat and says, fire, you guys need to get out. We're going to follow them.
Yep.
So there is a time when leadership needs to step up and needs to inspire, needs to take charge. But what people are looking for over the long term, and the number one finding and what people are longing for in a leader, is people who are honest. And I think that when we don't have the crisis, when we don't have the next big hill we're trying to climb, when we're trying to work out how to live life in the ordinary moments, you're looking for leaders that have character, are servants, and have that kind of disposition where you want to follow them because of who they are as opposed to what they've done.
Okay, we're chatting with John McCauley. He's the author of Leading from the In-Between, Crossing Bridges with Emerging Leaders, co-written, I guess, with Brenda Mells. Is that
yep.
how we say her name?
Yep.
Have I met Brenda? Do I know her?
That's Don's daughter. I'm not too sure.
Oh, okay. All right. When it comes to preachers,
yeah,
this is where I see leadership failing time and time and time again. And I get chastised a lot for picking on preachers. Now, I used to be one of them, and I stepped down because I realized that I shouldn't be one. And I think more guys, more women, or whatever, you know, people should be stepping down when they realize they shouldn't be there.
Mm.
Whether it's their family's falling apart, their marriage is falling apart, or they've got addictions that are out of control, or temptations that are too run over by their temptations, or So that's all the obvious stuff. Now let's jump to what we just talked a minute ago about, which is this teachability or this vulnerability or I don't know or I don't have it together. Do you really want a preacher that is going to stand up there and go, yeah, I'm not sure. I do. Really?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, my book is focused on emerging leaders. And the number one thing that young people want in their leaders, albeit preachers. And by the way, Drew, you're a preacher. You've now got a microphone, so let's not kid yourself. You didn't step away.
Snap.
You didn't step away from anything.
Dude,
You know, so I think that young people are looking for authenticity and reality. So, you know, I remember walking through the streets of Toronto, and we were taking kids from Regent Park to summer camp, and I turned to Rick Tobias, great friend.
You mean you asked them if they'd like to go? You weren't just taking them.
No, we invited kids up. So, exactly. So I said to Rick, as we were walking through the streets of Toronto, I said, Rick, you know, when you give money to people on the streets, how do I not know, you know, I don't want to feed their addiction. And Rick, you know, he's huge, massive, put his arm around me, pulled me really close and said, we all have our addictions. And I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I think that was the moment where we have to admit, you know, we all have our addictions. We all are broken. And this idea that we've arrived is the most dangerous thing, I think, in Christianity, that somehow one of my favorite verses in all of Scripture, which is being used in our generation over and over again, is go into all the world and make disciples. But what people miss is the opening line. It said, they came and they gathered around Jesus and they worshipped him, but some doubted. Then he said to them, go into all the world.
Oh, I'd never even put that together.
You know, isn't that amazing? And so when you look at that, you realize some doubted. Now, some people very fancifully try and say, oh, he was talking about the other people, not about the 12. Based on the behavior over the next number of years, you could tell they weren't quite there. And I think Timothy, who's one of my heroes in Scripture, Tim, yeah, you're named
it's
after
okay.
him.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, he was an ordinary guy who was struggling. In fact, the way it's written in the Greek even suggests that he probably, you know, was really struggling and had some sort of doubt. And so Welcome to the club. It's okay, Drew, to be a follower and still have questions and have doubts.
Yeah, your mission statement, the show's mission statement, is all based on that
sure,
idea.
Yeah.
Right?
Doubt is more compatible with faith than certainty
and
is.
And the messy spiritual lives.
Messy spirituality is the Christianity most of us live and few of us admit. Mike Iaconelli, that's his line. That's and great. Mike, in his book, Messy Spirituality, talks about this one preacher who went to resign. And stood up in front of his church and said, you know, I can't do this anymore. My doubts are too, I'm not sure anymore, da, 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 da. And his church had a big huddle meeting, and they came back to him and said, we want you to stay. We want you to preach through your doubts.
Yeah.
You think that's a smart move?
I need to know where his doubts are going to go in the end.
Well, why?
That's key.
Why?
Do you know what? I think if you're holding an office of responsibility, like I do as a leader overseeing a Christian organization, I think it's important I say these are the things I have doubts about. I remember you and I having a conversation where someone was questioning whether you go for training, be a chaplain or something at the hospital because they said that,
No, they asked me to step down as a hospital chaplain because I wasn't 100% sure that there's a God.
Right. So, okay. In light of what you see, but I can tell you, there's been times where I've stood at sick kids, stood at hospitals. I do a lot of pastoral work through our organization. And I've walked out sometimes with my own doubts saying, God, where are you?
Sure.
In this? So I want to say that I don't doubt the existence of God. I sometimes doubt how God acts or doesn't act. But it brings me right back down to the surety that there is a God and that there is a story unfolding that I don't know, but he does. And so I can put my faith on that piece. So if I stand up in a pulpit and I say, I don't even believe there is a God, I would want to ask deeper questions. What's going on in your life? What's bringing you to that? But to say I'm doubting God's presence or God's love for me or at a certain aspect of my life, I'm a spiritual director. I journey with people all the time through those questions, and that's okay.
When it comes to men and spirituality and that kind of conversation, first of all, I think chicks are way better at it. I really do. I think that females are wired to allow more light in easier. Mm. I think males, at least in North America, I can't speak for other, I think we have these filters and we have defense mechanisms and we block light a lot of our time.
Well, men tend to wear masks more. And that's the danger because you cannot find God until you find yourself and until the real you shows up. So it's very difficult for man to actually show up.
Because of the masks.
Masks, yeah. And there's a whole writing.
But does that mean
this.
We got to do all the hugging and the singing together and holding hands?
Kumbaya.
Yeah, we have to do
I
that.
Run a camp because, of course, we're going to do kumbaya. I haven't done that once in my 30 professional years.
No, but Amen, it creeps brother. Me out. I don't want to hug guys.
No, you know what?
We hug once or twice.
You hugged me when I was arrived, so come on, get over your show.
it's just the grabbing that makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what? I think we've got to find a more authentic place to show up and be, some guy. I mean, look at me. I'm wearing complete combat fatigues in your show today.
John McCauley showed up like he's still in the IRA.
No, I'm not in the IRA.
Oh, okay.
That would be the opposing.
All right.
No, you know what? I honestly, I'm finding there is some worry right now about the younger generation connecting, right? And I was part of the group that did the study Hemorrhaging Faith, and young people are exiting out of the church. But there is a longing for something that's tangible and real.
Well, I don't know. I think back to my first experience with leadership lingo was with Paul Henderson.
Absolutely.
And Henny got up on my grill a long time ago, and you're going to come to one of my men's groups? Yeah, sure. Okay. Yep. Because, if you love Jesus, you're going to come to one of my men's groups. Yep. If you're serious about God, okay, well, what time does it start? 6:30 in the morning. No, I'm not coming. No way, man. Come on. 6:30 in the morning? Well, then you really don't love Jesus.
Just so you know. Paul's one of my best friends in life, and he is one of the key people in my life that has brought me to this place.
Yeah.
And Paul is actually helping put together some of the funding for some of the Emerging Leaders programs.
So I shouldn't slag him anymore?
Well, I'm not going to let you. But I will tell you, Paul is a type A athlete.
Yeah.
Like, I play golf with Paul. There is no in-between place in his life. He'll get up there and say, John, put it out of the world. This shot will change your life. Like, Paul plays into the very best. That's why he said, get off the ice, I'm going to score. Like, so Paul brings all of his passion, all of his personality.
Yeah.
And I think the idea is that That's one way of expressing it. But Paul is the greatest encourager in Canada for people in their journey. And so
he's actually been my greatest encourager as well. He's been quite positive.
He's probably listening.
I also think he's lightening up a little bit as he gets closer to the end.
I don't think he's getting near the end. You're dreaming. He's going to score another 3 goals against Russia.
Can you imagine that? He laces up in the stands.
Okay, I'll tell you Paul Henderson's story. I came from Belfast, Northern Ireland.
By the way, he's a hockey player, folks. If you're just tuning in or if you're from the States, we're talking about the hockey legend.
Probably the greatest legend. Yeah. Right? I think some people would say, oh, you mean Wayne Gretzky? You know, actually, Wayne would probably say it's Paul Henderson. So, 87, I was a counselor at camp at Muskoka Woods, and they said, John, you want to stay in the VIP accommodation for the week? And I thought, that's nice, you know, I'll stay there. Knock comes to the door, open up the door, and Mark, who's the director, then said, I'm sorry, I need you to move out. And I said, why is that? He said, well, Paul Henderson's coming. And I famously go, who's Paul Henderson?
They mocked me.
And as it turns out, Paul ended up becoming one of my best friends. In fact, we went to Northern Ireland together, and Paul, right when he was just diagnosed with cancer, you know, he had. We hung out this idea of taking him to Northern Ireland to play golf, and I got into the restaurant. We arrived off the plane, and I said I wanted an Ulster fry, and which is the greatest food you'll ever eat in Northern Ireland. And they said, no, it's closed. I said, listen, I have one of Canada's greatest heroes here. I go, I need an Ulster fry. So the chef did for Paul Henderson an Ulster fry. I think Paul had an Ulster fry almost every day to try and put on weight. We had the best time together.
So what's in it?
Oh, it's eggs, beans, black pudding, sausage, bacon, soda bread, potato bread. Like, you've had one.
This is a coronary.
It's a coronary. They call it a heart attack on a plate.
Yeah.
You've been to my country, haven't you?
I've had one of those. I stayed at a bed and breakfast, and they came out with this big old plate of everything you just said, and it was disgusting.
That's the saddest thing I've ever heard from you.
I went and ate it up at the Rocks.
the big pile of rocks. Thanks, Mr. Marshall.
Giant's Causeway. Beautiful. All right. Listen, John McCauley is who we've been chatting with. He's going to stay with us because he's not finished. He's the author of Leading from the In-Between, Crossing Bridges with Emerging Leaders. John McCauley, our very special co-host on this St. Patrick's Day special. Stay with us.